So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
LouisvillePolitics.com, where you'll find all the latest that we continue to work on. And, man, I tell you what, we've got a lot working as usual. It's going to involve quite a few Metro Council members. That's something that we will wait to take forward later. But some of these prominent Metro Council members, they think their days are done after Barbara Shanklin. They're wrong. But before we go any further, we are going to get into a couple of quick stories locally before we get into 911 in Syria, because I think those should be the things we need to focus the show on tonight, considering today is the anniversary, the 12th anniversary of the 911 terror attacks on the World Trade Center. As always, though, on Wednesday, hello, Mr. Dale the Truth. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, my friend. How are you?
Not too bad. You know, it's been a pretty busy, busy day here in Louisville. I tell you what, it doesn't seem to stop. I do have a couple of stories, though, I kind of want your opinion on. One of them, basically, one of them is a new one that's going out. WHAS 11 is reporting that 4th Street Live now has a petition going for a wet, dry vote at 4th Street Live. Apparently, since the Metro Council, in their infinite wisdom, decided they wanted to pick and choose the winners in the liquor sales game, the Portland Business Association so they're not going to put up with that. So they're now circulating a petition asking for a wet dry vote on 4th Street Live to make 4th Street Live have to adhere to the same rules they do. I like that idea. How about you?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. That's what I was getting ready to say. I mean, where are they coming down on this? Because I don't have a problem with them selling liquor. I know a lot of people will tell the truth, and they'll say, well, you don't go down in those parts of town. You're right. I have no desire to be in those parts of town, but it has nothing to do with the liquor sales. I think it's just fair. If you're allowed to sell liquor in one part of the town, the other town should be able to get the sales as well.
Well, you know, we have a liquor store owner, Barbara Dill, who's quoted as saying that she has a lot of business between 2 and 4. She gets 50 to 60 cars of customers between 2 and 4 a.m., which is the cutoff point for the liquor stores in the West End now. And I agree with her. Why should the business have to suffer because of crime? It's not their fault. It's interesting because David James, District 6 Councilman David James. Now, I admit freely, I know David James. I like David James on a personal level. We do disagree politically, and it's going to be one of those times we do as well. You know, because he says that, you know, this is going to be good because around those locations is where crime occurs. And then he goes on to talk about it being a quality of life issue because these liquor stores are in people's neighborhoods. Well, you know, and I like the next line in here, though, because he also goes by to say that they are in areas where people try to raise their children. Now, this to me defeats the whole argument, because if you have a child that's on the street between 2 and 4 a.m. in the morning hanging out at a liquor store parking lot, you don't need to worry about that liquor store. You need to smack the hell out of the parents.
Well, my question, I don't pay a lot of attention to what David James says because he's not a very important person. He thinks he's important in his own mind, and to hell with him is my opinion of him. But,
well, I disagree with that
over there. Is he saying that because we don't have more government control over liquor, that that's what causes the area to be violent? Because if he's saying that, then how does he explain the drug wars with all these drugs that are already illegal? They're not legal, so... In other words, is he saying that if they were just legal and government control was over them, we'd have less violence?
Well, actually, I agree with where you're going with that, because I think
that's
what
you're
trying to say.
They can't have it both ways. They want to have it both ways. Oh, we got to have more control over substances because of the violence. But yet you say to not have the marijuana and cocaine and all that to be unregulated, to let that be wild and free. No, we can't put that under control because of the violence. How can it be both ways?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I can't even argue that point because I actually agree with you. And, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, most of the problems when you get into the alcohol-related problems, forget the drug problem because it's not the alcohol, it's the drug problem, which, unfortunately, that's what's going on at the liquor store parking lots that time of night. You're making drug deals out in the parking lot and hanging out and loitering, which is already against the law. So have the police do their job and clean up the lots. You shouldn't have to close a liquor store because you can't do your job. But, you know, it's interesting because it's the nightclubs and the bars that are the most common problem, and particularly 4th Street Live. The crime that goes on at 4th Street Live does not get reported, folks.
Nope.
We have all kinds of stories out of 4th Street Live about the fights that are going on, the open drug dealing that's going on at places like Rock or Hard Rock Cafe. You know, police, the off-duty police that are supposed to be there monitoring this situation are told to turn a blind eye. We've got all kinds of reports on that. So we know that's where the real problem is. And what they've essentially done now is you take a guy like me who used to work second shift, you know, you get off at 11 o'clock, 11:30, you may stop by Stooges or something, have a quick beer with your buddies, no more than one or two because you know you're driving home, all right? But you get out of there about 1:30, quarter to 2, and you decide you want to go by a liquor store and pick up a bottle and have a couple shots when you get home, all right? So you just took that out of the equation. Now, for somebody like me, you're probably going to stay at Stooges and go ahead and have your shots there. Now you're going to drive home drinking and driving between 2 and 4 and make the streets unsafe for the drivers who are out there on the road. We shouldn't have children out there at 2 o'clock in the morning. If we've got children out there at 2 o'clock in the morning we're trying to protect, we're doing something wrong here. No, what we've now done is create drinking and driving. I wonder why Mothers Against Drunk Driving isn't involved in this.
Well, with the DUIs, I mean, the drunk driving thing, I learned a long time ago what a scam that can be, because you have people with 3, 4, 5, 6 DUIs. Why are they still driving? I mean, if they're such a harm to society, why is it that they're back out on the street, but people who might sell 1 ounce of a controlled substance, and then we get into the question, why is it controlled? Why is it if one person makes a business deal with another person, they can do a lot more time than somebody who's almost killed people 3 or 4 times with their car while drunk?
You know, that's a very good point, too, because if you pay attention, if you go down to the courthouse and you watch these DUI cases in front of the judges, they automatically, in most cases, unless you spent a couple of $1,000s on an attorney who bribes the judge and gets you off, you know, and that does happen, folks. I'm not making that up. We know that happens. You know, but a lot of cases, these guys are found guilty, so their licenses are suspended immediately, and they just walk on out to the parking lot, no big deal, get in a car, drive home on a suspended license. The cops know they do it. Everybody knows they're doing it. We've actually had TV reports live on camera watching guys that have just had the license suspended going to their car and driving home, and, you know, and nobody's arresting them, but as soon as they get in the car. And the police are all right there. You know what I mean?
Well, to be fair, the people, and I haven't kept up with, I'm assuming that this is a vote that the entire Metro Council is probably going to be like good sheep, and they're all going to go along with it and shut these businesses down from operating at certain hours?
Yeah, well, trying to do is shut liquor stores down from 2 to 4 a.m. And they're saying they are going to allow, from what I understand, I may be wrong, they are going to allow beer sales between 2 and 4. But you cannot. They're going to exempt. Let's see if I got this right here. Here we go. Looks like they're going to try to exempt. The bill that's being presented does not apply to restaurants and bars, so they get free rein until 4 o'clock, so we can put more drunk drivers on the street. And it also exempts 2 to 4 a.m. licenses for beer sales. So you're not going to be able to get, you know, a shot or anything like that. I guess you're still going to be able to get your beer. But, you know, it still doesn't change the situation.
Well, the problem is all government control. I mean, on one hand, I have to give them credit for being consistent, because I've often said that the government wants to tell you all these bad things about these quote-unquote drugs that they are calling controlled substances, like marijuana or LSD or even hemp, which isn't a drug at all, but they want to say all this bad stuff about stuff that the government controls and not stuff that is actually more harmful, like caffeine and nicotine and alcohol. Well, they finally came after nicotine, we saw 20 or 30 years ago, pretty much did everything but destroy Kentucky's economy. So to be consistent, I guess they're doing that by going after alcohol more heavily now in that area. It's not consistent because, like you just said, they won't do it at 4th Street Live. They won't do it at some country club in the East End. So it's not consistent, but I guess in their own little way, and they're thinking that they're going to do something about the problem in that part of the town. I guess my other question would be, if a bar is exempt, then what stops we know what stops a liquor store from becoming a bar. They could be really cute and just say, hey, we're a bar, but then they'd have to jump through more government red tape to make it become a bar.
Exactly. And it's all about government red tape. If these guys clearly, you know, we have found out most recently with Syria on a national level, but we have found out through time that when it comes to matters of government, history repeats itself way too often. We found out that prohibition didn't work. All right. So, you know, now we're trying to work our way back to that, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to me. I do want to move on real quick, though. Just one quick thing here, then we're going to kind of switch gears, get into a national serious discussion here. Anthony Weiner. I don't know if you saw the story or not. This guy. What's incredible about this guy is he actually came in fifth out of like eight people. He actually beat a couple of people. He got 7% of the vote, the primary vote yesterday in New York. But apparently he wasn't very happy about it and decided he was going to give a reporter the middle finger from his car as he was leaving because he was pissed. I would hope that image alone, I mean, it's bad enough we can't scrape the image from our minds of Anthony Weiner and Weinergate playing with himself, talking online to women. I would hope that the image of him flipping off people, that it's true is what it shows what his true colors are, and that he's out of politics for good. What about you?
Well, he finished, like you said, he finished fifth or sixth out of eight candidates, and the same thing can be said for Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer, and his attempt. So I guess New York has a sense of some degree of civility and intelligence left to them. It's kind of ironic that you would think those were the only two people running for any races in New York were Spitzer and Weiner, because that's all you ever heard about on television. But yet these other candidates, lo and behold, got a lot more votes than these two. So that gives us hope for people voting for less criminal elements, I guess.
Well, you know, actually, that was one of the things I brought out of that, too, that it should give us hope, because those two guys, Spitzer and Weiner, got so much free publicity.
I don't know if the guys that beat them and got more votes are any better, because I never studied it. But
I'm not saying whether they are or not. Every time
we turned around, the media was beating us over our head with Weiner.
You had to term it that way, didn't you? All right. But here's the thing, though. I mean, I'm in agreement with this much, but with all the attention that came to Spitzer and Weiner, and anybody that's in the public eye will tell you, in most cases, negative attention is better than no attention, period. And Weiner and Spitzer got the benefit of so much free publicity. I mean, it seemed to be a nightly deal that we had to talk about one or the other for the last few months. And neither one of them pulled it off. So I think you're right. That does bode well for the future. I think that's a good way to put it. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to switch gears. We're going to start talking about Obama backing off, what we didn't learn from September 11th of 2001, and why there's so many similarities in the lies that are being told to us. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to the Ed Sprague Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid
it. Break early.
I'm Ed Sprague of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you. You guys that want to call in, you can reach us as always at 858-683-1326 or on our local line here in Louisville, Kentucky at 502-805-0334. And for you guys who are in the listening queue, and we appreciate it, there's always a bunch of you, just make sure you hit that little number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on the air. And with that said, Dale, I tell you what, man, I really want to get into the discussion. You know, we've talked about Syria quite a bit over the last week or so. You know, Syria is kind of taking the main stage. Today is the 12th anniversary of the September 11, 2001 attack on the World Trade Center. And, there's interestingly enough, a couple of things that are being forgotten, and I think that's where we'll start. Let's start with Benghazi.
Right.
You know, Benghazi, the strike on Benghazi was last September the 11th. It was intentional for that day. Four diplomats killed, including Ambassador Stephen. And, you know, we've got so much going there with the inconsistencies. It's really incredible how we have failed to come up with anything to appease the American public or anybody else, you know, on what's happened and the failures in Benghazi. We do know for sure that our elected leaders and our government leaders, including Hillary Clinton and President Barack Obama and a whole host of others, were fully aware of the problems, the security breaches and everything else leading up to the September 11th, 2012 attacks on the Benghazi. We do know that we actually had diplomats right across the street watching this thing unfold, sitting down at a restaurant telling people we need to get help here. And we do know that, that the people that could help were ordered to stand down. This has totally been lost now, hasn't it?
Well, the corporate media, again, this is one of those situations you got to put two and two together. They won't exactly say it in these words, but all you gotta do is take one piece of sound, another piece of sound, and I'm not talking about clipping what they're saying and mincing words or changing what they're saying around, but the corporate media is now forced to admit that the Benghazi attack was staged by a State Department jihadist that was in connection with arms transfer to Al-Qaeda. But,
right.
But they won't point out, however, that the administration tried to cover up the real reason for the murder of Ambassador Stevens. Ambassador Susan Rice in the State Department initially pointed to this stupid video, which I said right away had nothing to do with the video, and they consistently downplayed the incident, characterized as a non-event.
Well, you know, that's...
Did we lose your head?
My apologies, sir. I had to actually hit the microphone. I've got a kill switch on this new microphone, and I turned it off on accident, so I apologize. But, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are so many questions about all of this. It's unbelievable. And, you know, what's really fascinating here is, too, the person that was sitting out there lying to us about this whole situation and, you know, what's going on with the video is actually now the National Security Advisor. How do we explain something like that?
Well, yeah, you can. Like I said, I mean, you have this covert war going on between the Pentagon and the CIA, and this is what it really comes down to. You know, a lot of people who have gone on maybe alternative radio sources, we'll call them, or conservative media following the attacks, and they built an indisputable case that the CIA was shipping arms from U.S. control facilities located at the U.S. mission in Benghazi to Syrian mercenaries. And the murder of Ambassador Stevens was... obviously, I don't say obviously, but I guess we could say apparently, carried out by an Al-Qaeda group as part of this turf war between the CIA and the Pentagon. This is how far we've fallen.
Well, it really is a good example of how far we've fallen. I mean, you know, we've got Susan Rice going out there, National Security Advisor Susan Rice, that was telling the whole world. I mean, she played the game and did what she was told to do. That's how she got this promotion to National Security Advisor within the last year. But she went out telling everybody it was over an anti-Muslim film that got out of hand, which was a complete lie. You know, now we've got all of these other things. And I think it's important now, because Benghazi has been lost, and we need to really start paying attention to what's going on. You know, people don't want to understand how tied the CIA is with Al-Qaeda and everything else. I mean, we know that Al-Qaeda brought down the Twin Towers. Or at least that's what we were told. And we don't know. We don't. I understand where you're going
right.
with that. But that's what we were told. So if that is to have any truthful claim at all, then we cannot have any association with Al-Qaeda. As we now know, Al-Nusra Front is over in Syria. That's the rebels that actually shot off the chemical weapons that the Syrian Assad is being accused of, Syrian government is being accused of. Syrian rebels shot that off. Members of Al-Nusra, which are Muslim Brotherhood friends of Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett. I'm sorry, folks. That's legitimate. You can Google it and look at it yourself. We're not making up idle stuff here. Okay, so when we look at this, when we look at this in play, we know that Al-Nusra is nothing more than Al-Qaeda terrorists. If they've got chemical weapons, and they say that they do, and actually the Syrian rebels took full responsibility for the chemical weapons attack back in August. But here's what gives that credibility, and this is where people are missing the situation. The credibility, you know, when something bad goes wrong, when you do something on a national stage like this, every terrorist in the world wants to take responsibility and credit for it, right?
Yep.
It's just like a bully. You know, if somebody gets knocked down by somebody else and the bully's there, he wants to take the credit for it so he can get all the glory for it, sort of like Barack Obama's presidency. Well, the thing is, the Syrian rebels, the ones that talked, were very apologetic. They were telling the whole world that it was an accident. Now, I don't believe that. But they're telling the whole world that, yes, they're the ones that shot off the chemical weapon, but it was an accidental discharge. It was the weapons that brought to them from Saudi Arabia. Who's our friend, Dale? The Saudis,
well,
right?
We can't, Well, I mean, we can't tell the players without a scorecard within our own government. That's why I said that we really need to hone in on this covert war between the Pentagon and the CIA. Back in May, which was about 4 months ago, we had former government insider Steve Pisanek. He explained how the Pentagon had an effort to derail a CIA operation could have occurred. And what he said was, you have two elements of the government fighting each other that are covert. And it's never unified. The government is never unified. And you have the Pentagon side and the CIA side. It's been going for 30 or 40 years, a conflict between the military and the CIA and the FBI. And the CIA has been run for the last 50 years by civilians. And, of course, we know that the Pentagon is normally old military hawks. So they've had this war going on for a long time. All the evidence points to the Pentagon doing absolutely nothing to stop the attack on the compound.
Well, you know, if people want to pay attention to history, and I'm sure they don't because nobody likes the truth, but no. Here's the truth. Here's the truth. Back in the 1980s, Osama bin Laden was front man for an organization for the Mujahideen, okay? These were Islamic freedom fighters who were basically fighting against the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. Our CIA backed Osama bin Laden and his organization. We fed them money, weapons, and everything else. You know, so we have all of this. And Pakistan's prime minister at the time, Prime Minister Bhutto, told the first President George Bush, you are creating a Frankenstein. And, of course, we did. You know, if we look at this, back in 1994, we had two attacks that involved hijacking planes to crash them into buildings, which, of course, was an Islamic militant group. Oh, no, don't tell me that. And then the third attack, we had a single pilot crash a plane at the White House. You remember that little plane that landed at the White House?
Yeah.
You know, so we have all these things. So then when September 11, 2001 rolls around, we already have at least a 10-year history involving Islamic extremists, involving hijacked planes, and we act like we're just wholly shocked. We never expected something like that to happen. You know, if you want to fast forward, go on to 1996, the Saudi Arabian government that we are best friends with, they're our BFF, you know, they're financially supporting Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and all the other extremist groups. We didn't get involved then. We didn't get involved at all. You know, so we've got all of these things building up to what happened on September 11, 2001. The CIA is involved in financing Al-Qaeda. Okay, we've got the Saudis that are financing and helping Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. We've already been warned years before that we were creating this Frankenstein. And then as we come around to September 11, 2001, we're acting dumb like we didn't think anything like this was ever going to happen.
Well, like Comment. I said, if you go back to November, you had a lot of people don't read these stories. And again, I don't think that people dislike the truth. I guess it depends on which groups of people we're talking about. The government hates the truth. I think most of the common people don't have a clue about this stuff. And if we tell them about it, they'll think it's science fiction because the crap they see on their TV is real to them. And the stuff we try to tell them about is fiction. It's black is white and white is black and everything else that Orwell preached. But last November, you had Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer pointed out that Turkey, partnered with the CIA to take down Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And hours before the compound was attacked, and you had Stevens and others losing their lives, the Turkish Consul General Ali Said Akin met with the U.S. ambassador. And according to Egyptian security officials, Stevens was instrumental in recruiting jihadists for the CIA's war in Syria and served as a key contact with the Saudis. Remember, we're going back to the Saudis again, which
right.
is the country that the alleged attackers really came from. And he was a key contact with the Saudis to coordinate the recruitment by Saudi Arabia of Islamic Al-Qaeda fighters from North Africa and Libya. So it all goes back to Saudi Arabia, but we never want to stand up to them because that's a big-ass piece of land over there, that Saudi Arabia, and there's a lot of oil in that big-ass piece of land. So again, we want to talk about 9/11, but we want to go with the official alleged story and remember where those attackers all came from. They were all nationals of Saudi Arabia.
Oh, I'm totally with you on that. And that is the whole big problem here because nobody wants to – I don't know if they want to or they're too scared to know the truth. I'm going to go ahead and post a link in the chat room right now for you guys that wanted to look at it. And this is a great list of 911 facts and everything else. It's what I'm using as a template here. But what you're going to see more importantly is throughout this fact sheet, each one of these things are backed up with the stories and the articles and everything else of what was actually in print back then. We don't see these kind of stories now. They get hidden. But back in the 80s and the 90s, our media actually did put stuff out. And you're going to see sources like New York Times, Newsweek, Time Magazine, CNN, the BBC, Wall Street Journal. We're not talking about some blogger or some nobody that doesn't know anything about news giving a personal opinion. Okay? I mean, this is the way it was. Bill Clinton, everybody wants to blame George Bush for 9/11. But what they don't want to look at is Bill Clinton ordered the people who were tracking Osama bin Laden and paying attention to Al-Qaeda, ordered them to back off.
Oh, he
because
said
they started questioning Saudi Arabia. Do what?
Yeah, Bill Clinton told them point blank, he said that Osama bin Laden is not a threat. He's of no harm to us.
Right, right. He did. And so, you know, he tried to force everybody to back off. When he started getting close to Al-Qaeda and realized it was Saudi, they were told to back off. That should be disturbing in itself. But for some reason, people don't want to pay attention to that. So then we get into some interesting things here, too, as well. George Bush Sr. met with the bin Laden family as part of the Carlyle Group in January of 2000. He also met with them in 1998 under Clinton's regime. And I do say Clinton's regime. Bush's chief of staff, of course, couldn't remember what the meeting was all about, naturally. But here's an interesting thing, too. We all know that Colin Powell went to the UN and tried to make a case for going into Iraq. After this, and we started blaming chemical weapons and all the other things. What was interesting here was in May of 2001, just a couple of months before the attack, Secretary of State Powell gave $43 million to the Taliban government. And that was after we gave them $113 million in 2000. So we're seeing all these links. We literally financed our own destruction here. And we did it intentionally. I don't think there's any other way to put that anymore. Larry Silverstein, you know who Larry Silverstein is. He actually finally got approval. Let me find that now real quick. There we go. I apologize. Larry Silverstein in July of 2001, the end of July, he actually got a $3.2 billion 99-year lease of the World Trade Center finalized. And he insured it for $7 billion. And then 2 months later, or less than 2 months later, miraculously goes down. It's all very interesting. And it's really interesting, too, when you start piecing together all of the things that happened then. Even the day before, former President Bush, the first President Bush, was with one of Osama bin Laden's brothers at yet another Carlyle function.
Yeah.
Touting it up, drinking, having a good time. And then, of course, on September 10th, 2001, the most disturbing news was when Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld went out and said that the Department of Defense can't track $2.3 trillion.
Oh, yeah.
CBS later came out and said that 25% of the yearly defense budget is unaccounted for. And
that was
then
announced on September 10th, 2001.
Exactly. And then, of course, you got defense analysts who said the books are cooked routinely year after year. These are all from credible sources, folks. This is the stuff we make up. So we've got
this kind of story. I mean, we have this false left-right paradigm. We all know, and we've kind of almost trademarked the phrase the Uniparty here, but we know that this was the very beginning of the Bush administration. We know you had a complicit media who, for the most part, were still saying he had stolen the election because they didn't understand the Electoral College. You had union workers. Union workers are so smart. They held signs up saying abolish the Electoral College because apparently union workers don't know how to spell. And all this going on, you had the media hating George W. Bush, still do, the mainstream press. And my point is, if this had not happened, this has nothing to do with a conspiracy, I'm just telling you a point-blank fact. If the attacks had not happened on September 11th, the top story on every single newspaper, radio, well, I mean that radio show, because that's not the quote-unquote left-wing, but the top story on every newspaper, magazine, and TV show would have been that report of all those trillions of missing dollars.
Oh, sure. There's no doubt about it. So do you think the timing was coincidental? I don't. I really don't. I am starting to become one of those people who believe this was a planned demolition. I really do. So much evidence.
Well, I just continue to say what Jesse Ventura has said in his books and his appearances. Everybody freaks out and goes ape shit when somebody, especially with the national recognition, Jesse Ventura stands up there, and the moment you say, I don't believe the story as they have presented it to us, the moment you say you don't believe the exact story that a well-designed, well-read, well-studied government tells you, that somehow you're a conspiracy nut. And Ventura never said he knows what happens. He just says he doesn't believe what they're telling him happened.
Well, and I agree with you. And I tell you, it's really interesting, too, because we were looking further into this. And we also know Mohammed Atta, the hijacker of American Airlines Flight 11. That was actually the second plane to hit the World Trade Center. Everybody thought it was the first one, but it was actually the second one. But, you know, he was actually trained by the Air Force. According to reports, he actually went through an Air Force training officer course or something or other at an Air Force base and learned how to fly there. So he was Air Force trained. He knew how to fly. And then we're supposed to believe that another hijacker by the name of Hani Hanjour, who couldn't speak any English, could not get his commercial pilot's license, was tried to get a translator to help him pass in flight school, but the flight school wouldn't allow it because it's against the rules. The guy had no flying skills, but yet Hanjour was able to execute a 360-degree turn on Flight 77 right into the World Trade Center. Or I'm sorry, this is the one that went into the Pentagon. And where it hit the Pentagon, now you want to talk about the ultimate coincidence, it hits the Pentagon in the newly renovated part of the Pentagon that didn't have any employees in there yet, and the offices weren't even done. So it didn't take out anything of significance. You know what I mean? So this is very interesting information. And this is what we've done. From the 80s on, we have funded Al-Qaeda. We have funded people like Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. We continue to fund Al-Qaeda now through the Syrian rebels. This is something that's a continuing, ongoing concern. And we're trying to act like we've got some kind of a moral high ground here. I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
There are a lot of stories that that don't come out. And like I said, I don't want to make people go through a whole detective story. And some of it's just too much high grass for people to follow to what's inside baseball. But I'll tell you another interesting one. Some of these stuff, we never hear about them after they're not hot news anymore. But do you remember the story, or do you remember the guy by the name of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
Yep.
Remember he was the alleged admitted mastermind of the 9/11 attacks?
Yep.
Well, I'm reading a story that I've been kind of researching going back. This is from the Oregonian, of all places, and this came out roughly 2 months ago. It was talking about how, you know, this guy is supposedly still in a, about the time, 10 years ago, he was still in the basement, confined to the basement of a CIA secret prison in Romania somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, what I think is interesting, and this is in the Oregonian, and the AP picked it up, and a few alternative press people picked this up a couple months ago. This guy, Mohammed, had endured, you know, supposedly the most brutal of the CIA's harsh interrogation methods, but the agency had no long-term plan for him. Someday, you know, they might think he could be useful again. Perhaps he'd even stand trial. Well, this guy, this is way out in left field, I know, but he got permission, Sheikh Khalid Mohammed,
mm-hmm.
from this prison, secret prison cell basement of Romania. It's going to sound like a joke, but it's a true story. He got permission to begin his study of the re-engineering of the vacuum cleaner. Have you heard about this story?
I've heard of it. I've never read it, though.
Yeah. So the CIA began working with Mohammed, who, of course, is the mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks. And the CIA was giving Mohammed all the resources he needed to begin re-engineering one of the most mundane of household appliances. I guess that the CIA may be in possession of Motorola's most highly classified vacuum cleaner blueprints is one little peculiar byproduct of this 9/11 thing, I guess. But I thought that was weird that this guy, who supposedly is one of the most evil men in the world, the CIA is working with him and helping him redesign the vacuum cleaner. Is this a weird story or what?
You know, to be truthful with you, man, anything anymore doesn't sound too weird to me at all. It really don't, and that's what's really sad about it.
This guy was the most evil thing in the world until Osama bin Laden came along.
Well, you know, maybe they're trying to re-engineer the vacuum cleaner to use it as an explosive device. I don't know, and that's probably what he was doing. But you know, it is interesting.
CIA prison in Poland was closed. This was 10 years ago. After the CIA prison in Poland was closed, and this guy supposedly, allegedly, was bounced around from Bolivia to Romania to Poland, to all these secret prisons in Europe. And after this prison was closed in Poland, he was moved to Bucharest, to a black site codenamed Bright Light. And again, the prison had a debriefing room where Mohammed, who called himself a professor, would hold office hours. I mean, this is too weird to be true. This is like science fiction, but it's coming from the Oregonian, of all places, that's printing the story, that this guy held, like, office hours while chained to the floor. CIA officers would come in and be lectured on things by Mohammed.
That is incredible. It really is. And you know what the sad part is? It's probably true. Coming out of the Oregonian, chances are it is. So that's what's really crazy. And you know, it's that kind of stuff, though, Dale, that continues going on. I mean, you know, throughout the whole year of 2001, there were warning after warning. We were working with Sheikh Mohammed. There was all kinds of things. I mean, even bin Laden, just 2 months before this, supposedly received kidney treatment for bad kidneys at the American hospital in Dubai. The doctor won't answer any questions about it and refused to. And bin Laden was visited by at least 2 CIA officers. What was that conversation about? 2 months later, he supposedly, you know, carried off 911 attacks. We've got July of 2001 as well. A Phoenix FBI agent, you know, had sent a memorandum that was ignored. No action was taken telling them about Middle Eastern men taking flight lessons. And then, of course, you know, we've got all of these different things going on. Everything's adding up and building up. Intelligence officials were warned by Britain and Israel, everybody. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say a year ago, and again, you got to remember a year ago, we were in the middle of the presidential election, supposedly, allegedly, when we had no real choice. It was truly
right.
Dumb and Dumber.
Right.
And there was a book that came out, and I don't even remember much about this, but this is a good thing about researching things. There was a book that came out by a journalist named Kurt Eichenwald, and it was about all the warnings that George W. Bush had received. You remember hearing about this book a year ago? I don't.
No.
I mean, they must have buried this book. This book supposedly came out around September 11th last year. And in this book, among other briefings, Eichenwald says that on May 1st of 2001, the CIA said a terrorist group in the U.S. would plan an attack. On June 22nd, they said the attack was imminent. On June 29th, the briefing warned of near-term attacks with dramatic consequences, with major casualties and large skyscrapers. On July 1st, the briefing said that the terrorist attacks had been delayed, but would occur by the end of September. And then finally, on July 24th, President George W. Bush was told again that the attack had been delayed, but would occur within months.
You're right. And on August the 5th of 2001, Israel warned us of an imminent al-Qaeda attack. So this was a continuing concern. But every time that this was brought up from credible sources, Israel, even the United Kingdom, the Brits even got involved. Hell, Russia even tried to warn us. And every time this happened, we just ignored it, said, nah, it's not going to happen. But here are some things that are interesting about what else was going on September 11th, and I'm not sure it's coincidental. Warren Buffett, everybody knows who Warren Buffett is, scheduled a charity event where? Off at Air Force Base in Nebraska. He's got a very small group of select business leaders who attended this charity event, okay? And that's where George Bush flew when the attack happened, because there's an underground command center at the Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska. The second richest man on earth, with a small group of select business leaders with him, supposedly doing a charity event inside an Air Force base that just happens to be the underground command center where George Bush shows up on the day of the attack. Doesn't make much sense to me. Again, we've got recovery experts who try to take the data from 32 World Trade Center computer drives that were going to reveal the financial transactions. We found out there were illegal transfers of over $100 million that were made through some of those WTC
computer
drives
and the black helicopter
before and during the Devast disaster. But all that ended up...
Are we there, Ed?
Folks, yeah, I'm here now. We lost all connection, as usual. Whenever we get into stuff like this and get real serious... This happens. If you don't think you're being watched by the NSA or anything else, folks, I'm not kidding.
Did you go out too, Ed, or is it just me that lost the connection there?
Everybody did.
Well,
everybody lost connection.
I was just getting ready to read to you about some stuff that was housed in the World Trade Center where they kept a lot of high-tech internet secrets, and then all of a sudden I was off the air.
Yep. That doesn't surprise me much, because as soon as I started talking about all the daggone data that shows all the illegal transfers of money show up, bam.
I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
That's not the first time that's happened. That's what makes it so fascinating.
Wow.
You know, but then we've got all this other stuff. Then you've got other coincidences. You've got the National Recon Office, or the NRO, was set for an exercise at 9 a.m. on September 11th, in which an aircraft would crash into one of its buildings near Washington, D.C. Does that sound at all like what we tried to do with the Boston bombing? Remember, there was an exercise going on there, too, when the bombs went off. Miraculous, isn't it? And there were also four war games that were all going on at the same time of the attacks. Now, I want to finish this real quick, Dale, then I want you to jump in. But the reason it all happens is because I've been in the military. I'm a veteran. Okay? You have four war games going on all at the same time in the time of these attacks. You know, what people don't understand is back then, I'm not sure if it's still true today, but back then in 2001, the entire continental United States is defended by only 7 air bases and 14 military jets. 2 military jets from air base, from each of those air bases, is what defends the continental United States. Not sure if that's still true today. So if you've got four war games going on, all these planes are out there, okay? And then at the time of the attack, the planes that we scrambled to go after these guys, this is really amazing too. Those planes, half of those planes didn't even have any munitions on board because they had just dumped all of them on weapons targets on practice bases where they had weapons targets set up. They just dumped all the munitions, so they didn't have anything to shoot with. Go ahead, Dale.
No, I just was going to talk about the fact that we heard there's stories about how some of the delay in getting the fire pilot scrambled or descrambled for those 9/11 attacks was the fact that they had already had a very coincidental, I'm sure it's all just coincidental, planned test for that morning. They had tests planned for what would happen if terrorists had attacked us. So, I mean, do you hear that story, Ed?
Yeah, I do, and that's exactly what I was just talking about. Because they had already scheduled the exercise for 9:00.
Yeah,
for what happened if a plane crashed.
The tests were already scheduled, and one of the guys who's really come on like gangbusters recently, and I've been a fan of this for a long time. I think I've even heard you give him some praise. Is Ben Swan? You know Ben Swan?
Love Ben Swan
from up around Cincinnati. He used to do the show there on the airways.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I want to give him a free plug real quick because Ben Swan is no longer with WXIX. Cincinnati TV. He's got his own thing now at benswan.com. That's Ben Swan, SWANN.com.
Yeah.
This guy
is
the one behind the reality check, and he's dynamite. Go ahead, Dale.
No, he's great, and he did a story yesterday where he was talking about, again, maybe he's getting some audience from the political movements that wouldn't have been following this back around 9/11, because the only bad thing about being this far away from 9/11 is the same thing as the good thing, which is some people or want to forget about it, want to just tune out on it, but maybe some people are finally willing to face reality on it. And he started reminding people yesterday that we had the third building that fell. Remember Building 7? No one talked about Building 7. It was never hit. It was never touched. There supposedly were no explosives around it, but the building just free fell. And Ben Swan was talking about there's a group now called Rethink 9/11, and they're taking out ads over Times Square, over New York City, over San Francisco and Canada. And basically, people will say, aren't these just a fringe group of people that still question 9/11? No, because we can tell you about polling now, new polling that shows a majority of Americans question the original 9/11 story or don't believe it at all.
Well, let's be real about Building 7, too, because what most people don't understand is this was reported, but nobody paid attention to it. It wasn't reported on mainstream news. This is one of the things that wasn't reported on mainstream news. But the 911 collapse of the WTC Building 7, all right, for one thing, it was the first time a modern steel-reinforced high-rise building in the U.S. had ever collapsed in a fire. It was 47 stories, but it was modern. It wasn't like one of the Twin Towers that had been up for quite some time. So this is the first time this was happening. But what's interesting here is Building 7 was where the SEC, you know, the Securities Exchange Commission folks, were storing files related to the numerous Wall Street investigations. They had 3,000 to 4,000 cases of files on active Wall Street investigations that were totally destroyed. These files, some have speculated, could show the relationship between Citigroup and the WorldCom bankruptcy, and, of course, everything else, there was a fallout from it. So you've got 3,000 to 4,000 cases of files that were related to SEC Wall Street investigations miraculously disappeared. Why weren't any of those files brought out before they destroyed the building?
Well, the thing about
they had plenty of time.
No, I know. You're right. And more than 2,000 architects and engineers have joined together to say that the claim of Building 7 coming down because of office fires is not only untrue, but not even possible, because no skyscraper in the history of the world has ever come down that way. And this is why people like Ben Swan has to go on his own to do this. I mean, we can talk about it. Alternative press talk about it, but nobody in the globalist-controlled media are going to cover it. Stop calling them liberal media, because no one calls Fox News liberal media, and Fox News won't touch these stories. You won't get the wall builder Sean Hannity or the leprechaun Bill O'Reilly. You won't get either one of them to talk about this. They in fact, dismiss this. If you try to call their shows, they will hang up on you if you talk about this. So nobody in the mainstream press talks about this. But again, just like trillions of dollars being missing the day before the attacks would have been the biggest story in the world. If 2,000 architects say that the official story for Building 7 is a lie, why isn't that all over the news?
I'm totally with you there. As a matter of fact, I think it's 2,200 now. But I'm totally with you there. It's fascinating to me. You know, and for those who think that we just liberal bash and everything else, you know, this all started with Clinton, continued with George Bush. Now it's continuing with Obama. The lies and deception, the whole purpose of telling everybody these stories is because history is repeating itself. Our government is lying to us once again to try to justify going over to the Middle East for whatever we think we're going to get. Afghanistan, they were going over there to get the lithium. Iraq, they were going over there to get the oil, the Saudis, to protect the Saudi interests there. I mean, we're becoming the military police, if you will, for Saudi Arabia. Because that's the only reason we're in the Middle East. We have no interest there. We're over there because of Saudi Arabia.
Because that brings us back to today, Ed. And look what we have going on today with Dear Leader. I mean, we could have gone the whole show without mentioning, well, you might have mentioned this thing earlier, but we could have gone without mentioning Obama, because he's one of the least important people on the world stage now. But what about
Obama's
the fact,
a puppet.
Well, yeah, so he's a very unimportant and a lame duck puppet. We know that now. And what about the fact that he gave the speech from the White House yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
And we're 12 years later. Remember, all we've heard, the reason we had to have Homeland Security, the reason that war veterans in wheelchairs and 90-year-old crippled women have to be groped and raped at the airport, is because the terrorists are coming after us, because Al-Qaeda is coming after us. And Barry Satoro, a.k.a. Barack Obama, gives a speech yesterday from the White House in Syria where he says that Al-Qaeda militants, of course, he calls them, what does he call them now? Syrian rebels.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda militants now just want to live in peace, with dignity and freedom. This is what your president said from the White House. And again, that's the only words you have to change from what I said to the point that he said, because just look it up. The only thing that a Syrian rebel is, or I used to be, it was protester. Remember, it was Syrian protesters. Except these protesters have handheld rocket launchers because they're called Al-Qaeda. And Barack Obama said, Al-Qaeda just wants to live in peace with dignity and freedom.
Oh, I agree. I agree totally. He did say that. And we can, as a matter of fact, I'll put up a link to the entire transcript right in the chat room right now of his speech. You guys can read everything for yourself. You know, we don't have anything here. But, you know, it is interesting. And what's really fascinating is all this stuff, history is repeating itself right now. We're not paying any attention to it whatsoever. The will of the people is completely gone. You know, but what people really are overlooking today, as far as I'm concerned, Dale, is they're not really understanding the relationships here. In 2001, we wanted to do an exercise the same day as the Twin Towers get hit, simulating a plane hitting a tall building in New York or Washington, D.C. Guess what? Real life, it happened the same day the exercise was going on. Boston bombing, the same damn thing. You know, all of these things are related. History is repeating itself. But the one thing that really stands out to me over this Syria deal today, and I'll be honest with you, is the American people. Oftentimes, we spend our time here on the show challenging whether American people really care or not. And it was really fascinating how many people called their Congress critters and their Senate critters and everything else, the House of Senate members, and how many people called the White House and said no to Syria. Because if they wouldn't have done that, we would have already bombed. So is that boding well for the future? Are Americans finally at that point where their apathy has run its course and are willing to get involved?
It's just too much work for them. I mean, again, the stuff we're telling them is too complicated. It's like hard math. I mean, it's like some of these kids in school, if you want to ask them what 4 + 4 is, and they'll think about it, and after a while they'll say, damn it, I'll just be like my mom and become a stripper. I mean, it's too much hard work, this heavy lifting, this this long math and division that we're making them do. I mean, they just want to sit and watch some stupid American Idol or Dancing with the Idiots on TV. I mean, we're making it too difficult for them, and these people vote. And this is the problem. This is the same reason I've always said I don't want a bigger get-out-the-vote campaign for voters in general. Informed voters, yes. Idiots, no.
Right. Well, we're going to take our last quick break, then we'll come back for closing arguments, okay? All right, stay with us, folks. This is the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a difficult moment for America. I unfortunately will be going back to Washington after my remarks. Secretary Rod Paige and Lieutenant Governor will take the podium and discuss education. I do want to thank the folks here at the Booker Elementary School for their hospitality. Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country. I have spoken to the Vice President, to the Governor of New York, to the Director of the FBI, and have ordered that the full resources of the federal government go to help the victims and their families, and to conduct a full-scale investigation to hunt down and to find those folks who committed this act.
Network. I'm Ed Springson, your host, along with Dale the Truth Gillespie. I tell you, Dale, you know, this I want people to hear this sound clip real quick.
Right. Nobody moves. Everything will be okay. If you try to make any moves, you'll injure yourself and the airplane. Let's stay quiet.
That was Muhammad Atta on American Airlines Flight 11. While the control towers were trying to get a hold of him, they were able to capture that sound bite. You know, that's what a hijacker sounds like, folks. That's what's happened on 911, and it was set up to be that way. You know, we are experiencing the same thing. One of the things I really want to point out to the audience, we touched on last night, Dale, I know you weren't on the show then, you know, is the lie behind these chemical weapons. You know, for one thing, Barack Obama continues lying, saying that he has legal authority. When George Bush responded to the 9/11 attacks, he was probably the only president in recent years who had legal authority to bypass Congress, because that was a direct and imminent attack on the United States of America. That's when the president has legal authority to take action. There's nothing in Syria that is a direct or imminent threat or attack to the United States of America, is there?
No.
So Barack Obama lacks the standing to do that, even though he's still lying to the people and lied again last night about it. You know, and when you talk about the chemical weapons, we really don't have any moral authority either. You know, how often have we used chemical weapons ourselves in places like Vietnam and everywhere else, or our allies, Israel, have done the same thing?
Yeah, I did a whole show last week talking about all the different times we had chemical weapons used, and we either approved of it or conducted it. I say we. I shouldn't say that. The United States government.
I totally agree.
That's not us. We are not the government. That's the one battle cry we got to get out this year. We talked about between the break there how there's no elections this year. So, you know, don't have any cheap, sleazy slogans that all the campaigns are using. So the slogan I want people to remember is we are not the government. We are the people. The people are not the government.
Okay, fair enough. You know, but if we look at this, I mean, we can trace back at least 50 years or maybe even longer, actually a little bit longer, where we're actually using chemical warfare. In Vietnam, we dumped 20 million gallons of chemicals between the years of 1962 and 1971. Everybody knows about Agent Orange. You know, we sprayed Agent Orange everywhere. We destroyed the farmland, destroyed the food supply, destroyed the jungles. Hundreds of thousands of innocent people were killed. You know, along with that, we had 400,000 people that were maimed, 500,000 babies born with birth defects. Remember, we want to do this for the kids, right? Barack Obama is talking last night, trying to use the kids, once again, talking about how we can't allow these children to suffer from these chemical attacks. We don't seem to have a problem with that on our own, though. You know, we've got 500,000 babies born with birth defects, not including the ones that were killed from Agent Orange. 2 million have suffered from cancer. You know, 1 million people in Vietnam still have disabilities or health problems from Agent Orange from back then. You know, I mean, let's call a spade a spade, and let's get into, you know, let's talk about the Iraqi civilians in 2004. You know, jump in here any time, but in 2004, we used white phosphorus. For those of you who don't know what white phosphorus does, white phosphorus was something, it's a chemical agent that we used. And what it does, this chemical is basically an incendiary weapon. When we use white phosphorus, what it does is it actually melts all the skin on your body down to the bone. We didn't care about the babies we were attacking with the Iraqi civilians, did we?
No, the U.S. government didn't. Again, I didn't do this. You didn't do it, but right. The U.S. government didn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Tuskegee. Look at Chicago, what they did on the citizens of urban Chicago with their warfare experiments. Look what they did with the airmen at Tuskegee.
Right. You're absolutely right. So, you know, we don't mind melting women and children to death with our chemicals, but God forbid Syria uses a chemical weapon on their own soil. We don't mind going over there and using it on them, but we don't want them to use it on their own. You know, and then, of course, we talk about Saddam Hussein back in the 80s. You know, we supplied him with everything. He was using sarin, nerve gas, and mustard gas in the Iran-Iraq war, and we were the ones who were giving it to him, you know. You know, and we go back even further down. I'm not going to go through this whole list, but we can go back further than that. You know, the Army, our Army, tested chemicals back in the 1950s. They set motorized blowers up on top of their high-rise buildings in the low-income, mostly black St. Louis neighborhoods. 70% of the residents were under age 12. And they put these blowers out there, was pumping the air full of hundreds of pounds of something called zinc cadmium sulfide. They won't tell us what the second ingredient was in there. And they won't tell us if it was radioactive. But, you know, that killed people and hurt people. So it's not like this is something new for us. We use chemical weapons all the time. We use tear gas. That's a chemical weapon. Look at Waco in 1993. You know, Dale, the bottom line is we've got this history, and nobody wants to talk about our history or our role in the chemical weapons used because we've got this moral authority to go after somebody else that uses it. That's bullshit. Would you agree?
I totally agree. It's again, it's do as we say, not as we do, and the U.S. government has been involved in so many of these attacks, and then if the United States gets attacked, we're told, well, it happened because they hate us for our freedom.
Right, right. And we're going out protecting freedom around the world. But I fail to see, I haven't seen any documented evidence yet where these arms that we're giving to the Al-Qaeda Syrian rebels, where these Syrian rebels have passed a background check yet. Have you?
Nope. I don't think that they'll go through the scanners. I don't think they'll have to go through scanners and get orally sexually abused to get the weapons. I don't think they'll have to go through a waiting period or anything.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing. I don't think that they have waited up to 90 days or been forced to take a $400 training course on gun safety. You know, I don't think they've had to go through any of that stuff. You know, so there, you know, there's some things here, but we got to go over there and protect freedom, because the real at the end of the day, the only thing we're protecting is Saudi Arabia. I mean, that's ultimately
what
we're
protecting. Oil. We're protecting oil. We're protecting the political oligarchy. And more than anything, we're protecting the military-industrial complex.
Well, there you go, man. I tell you, folks, we've given you a lot to think about tonight, and we'll give you more. If you want a copy of some of these show notes or some of the links that we're using for sources, you know, you can write to me at myviewmatters@aol.com, you know, because it's very disturbing, and you're going to find these sources are legit. I mean, Washington Times, New York Post, you know, everything, the AP, it's all right there. So you can write me at myviewmatters@aol.com, and I'd be more than happy to give you the links to save you some trouble going through Google. Because believe me, sometimes it takes hours to find what you want. With that said, Dale, it's the end of the night, man. Final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts, again, this is September 11th, and we talked about we come full circle. We were told for years and years and years the reason we were given a Department of Homeland Security was because we had to be protected from the evil boogeymans with the flies on our face in the caves across the world. And now we come to our president, Barack Hussein Obama, who told us from the White House that he just wishes that we could let Al-Qaeda be peaceful and tranquil and enjoy their freedom. That's how far we've come. So when they tell you that they're attacking us because of our freedom, then don't attack them, and maybe they won't attack us for our freedom. Because in the end, the globalists are going to play their game. They're going to hold their puppets up, and you've got to learn to cut the strings and say death to their new world order.
You know, it's sad but true, so much of what you just said. I mean, the bottom line, folks, is this. You know, oftentimes we talk about how we can't do anything, that this government is going to do what they want regardless of what we say or do. And Dale and myself and a whole host of others continue pointing out the obvious, that we the people have control. The government should fear the people. The people should not fear their government. That's the way it's supposed to work. And in this particular case with Syria, it did work. Because of the outrage, because of the phone calls, because people were taking to the social media sites and getting involved, you know, it made a difference. We stopped another war crime by this president from happening. Because the politicians at the end of the day only care about themselves. It doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, as I hope we've proven throughout this show. You know, the Democrats and Bill Clinton said no, don't investigate Al-Qaeda and the Saudis. The Republicans under Bush did the same thing. Now Obama has decided to take sides and sided with the Muslims. As he said in his book, Dreams of My Father, he said that he would side with the Muslims. And he's proven that. The Muslim Brotherhood is alive and well. Ask Valerie Jarrett. Ask Barack Obama. Ask Eric Holder. Ask a whole host of others in our White House, the White House that we paid for. And that's what's really going on here. They have brought the religious war to American shores and have somehow deceived the American people for power. But over the last week, the American people stood up and pushed back against part of that power. We refused to allow Syria to be bombed based on a lie. Yet another lie in a long list of many. So when you think that you don't have the power or you think that you can't do anything, think again. Because we now have one example where you can. And I hope that makes you all feel empowered. And I hope when you wake up in the morning, you sit in that mirror and you're looking at that mirror combing your hair and you're saying, my view matters. Because you just proved that your view did. Now on a side note before we get out of here, I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you to at least 880,000 bikers, maybe more. We don't have a final number yet. The latest reports show that at least 880,000 bikers showed up in Washington, D.C. to offset today's event that was supposed to be the Million Muslim March. The last word I had was there was only a couple of hundred Muslims who dared show up. So our Americans, our American patriots, riding their motorcycles, hundreds of thousands of them, and maybe even more, went to Washington to tell the Muslims to shut up. This is our country. And I thank God for every one of them. And I'm very proud that we had some real Americans stand up against the atrocity that I believe would have occurred if we have a million Muslim march on September 11th. Are you kidding me? So thank you to all the bikers who were there physically. Thank you to everybody in America who was there mentally. And God bless the USA. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Dale will be here. Dale, yep. Anything special, or do we want to surprise him?
Well, I'm just going to say this. We are going to read on the air a letter that a dying, elderly military veteran sent to Congress, calling them on the carpet. A dying military veteran wrote this letter earlier this year, and I don't know if the guy has already passed on to the other side or if he's still holding on with his failing health. But a gentleman named Bill Schoonover wrote a letter to Congress telling them how worthless and disgusting and repulsive that they are. And we're going to read it on the air tomorrow night.
Awesome. You guys want to make sure you tune in for that. Still the Truth tomorrow night with the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show right here on Blog Talk at 7 p.m. And don't forget our good friend Ken Moman on Sunday night at 7 p.m. with Liberty Unbridled. With that being said, folks, have a great night. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.